Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Business Association. The New Africa Business Association and Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. I am your host, speaking to you directly from Washington, D.C., along with my co-host,
Abdulaziz Shaheed, and assalamu alaikum and greetings to you, Brother Bilal, and our audience.
Greetings, Brother Aziz. How are you this evening?
Oh, great, great, brother. Doing good, brother. Doing good.
All right, good. We're going to continue our discussion, and this discussion is going to continue until the event, and that is the Jubilee March of Representative John Lewis. And that Jubilee March, you know, is taking place March the 3rd until March the 6th. And of course, we sent you out links. We're sending out links every week. And all you have to do is go to the link that we sent out, and it'll show you some pictures of the march. But it also will tell you how to get information for those of you who would like to go to the march. And again, we will broadcast some of that information as we speak. And of course, that would be the John Lewis Jubilee March, again, March the 3rd to March the 6th. And if you like information on that, you can go to their website, in which that would be www.selmamarchjubilee.com. Again, I repeat, Selma March. Let me do this right. I'm sorry. That would be the SelmaMarchJubilee.com, and I'll spell that out to you. Again, that's the Selma, S-E-L-M-A, Jubilee, J-U-B-I-L-L-E.com. So that's the SelmaJubilee.com. And you can certainly get information. Again, I repeat, www.selmajubilee.com. And that will get you in touch with representatives who can give you information about your coming and participating in the John Lewis Jubilee March, again, March the 3rd to March the 6th. And this evening, again, we're going to have open mic. We don't have any guest speakers to speak on anything specifically. And so we're just going to have an open mic, and whatever your business concerns or your political concerns, we will certainly welcome your comments. So, Brother Aziz, again, another week of trying to inform the peoples, and you know, New Africa Business Association, our purpose is to be informative, and we've said many, many times, excuse me, when it comes to African Americans, we don't have too many avenues to be informative to the public with. We don't have the TV.
Right.
And some of your other large network communications. Therefore, we have to be as informative in any channels that we can spread our information in our communities. We have to try to be as informative with each other as we possibly can. And of course, the New Africa Business Association, hopefully, will be one of those channels as to where you can pick up or we can share certain information. And again, that's what it's all about tonight. It's open mic. And as you call in, we'll be opening up the mics for us all to hold a conversation until the end of the show. So, Brother Aziz, as usual, why we're giving the audience, our audience, a chance to come in. I will welcome, it's good speaking with you. How's everything going with you?
Thank you. Any
comments that you like to make? And Brother Aziz, and now I'm going to go with your comments, and then I guess I'll start asking some things that concerns me after you make your general comments.
Yes, thank you, Brother Bilal. It's good talking with you too, Brother, again. And that some of my concerns in right now existing is, again, I say politics has something to do also with business. It has quite a bit to do with business. But for the small businessmen that we're trying to reach out to at New Africa Business Association in Washington, D.C., politics do affect these small businessmen when major changes are made in cities and they don't know that things are going to be rezoned, as well as, you know, normally a lot of the major changes when it comes to diverting traffic and transportation, large volumes of traffic, they'll run that through a section of the African-American neighborhood and cut off business connections that was right in the middle of the neighborhood. So what's going on now, I see in a lot of places, as one of our regular supporters and hosts, members of the New Black Wall Street, New Africa, New Black Wall Street, Brother Sam Harris was saying that they're buying blocks and blocks of our cities up. And pretty soon, brother, you know, actually, especially in a lot of the southern cities where we're thick and heavy, a lot of our youth are leaving those places because of no opportunities. And the only people left there is the old folks. And when the old folks go, as myself, like myself, when we go, the young ones, the youth are not going to want to come back to those places because they've established them a new life in some other places. And that's some of the economics that's been hurting the African-American down in the southern part of America, primarily in North Carolina, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Louisiana. These places in particular, Arkansas, these particular places in particular, we know, this is not no theory or anything like that, we know that for a number of years that we've been suppressed down there when it comes to finding good jobs to be able to support your family. So you had to leave those areas in order to find better work. And some didn't come back, and some took the whole family and let the property go, whatever. We don't want to come back there no more. So now we see this is trying to resurge again on things in terms of we have to be silent about the things that we're going to do in a sense once we get together, because what we saw happen down in Selma, Alabama, is brothers and the investment groups, African-American investment groups, went down there when the Caucasians, who had actually literally left town, found out that some other important things were going to start going on there. They start coming in too and buying up all the land and trying to wait till the business come to them, and they prosper for it. So that's one of the things we've got to do if we can, to any of our listeners that's listening out there. One can't do it, as Brother Bilal is mentioning in our opening a number of times, that one can't do it, but what many can. And that applies in all aspects of us getting out there in the business world, investing in one another by looking at these situations, coming together as groups and start buying some of the community properties up. I know it's hard. It's been difficult for us to do, but, you know, there are certain leaders in the community that can express these type of coming together and investing together in the places where people will listen, i.e. such as the churches. the churches, the masjids, the masjids all around. These, the synagogues, if we go to them, the temples, if we go to what we call the temple, but where we as a people experience the same thing, no matter how we want to label ourselves, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Israeli, whatever, we're all treated the same way, and we're all coming up with the same results when it comes to us moving forward. So it's not unreasonable. It's only the right thing to do. It's come together in groups, small and big, and invest in your community. Protect your community, for one thing, as others protect theirs. In our community, you see all kind of riffraff going down, especially in the inner cities. Those of us that live in the suburbs and in better communities in the city, you don't see that type of activity. But in the places in the inner city where this type of activity takes place, it can be stopped. And we understand that a lot of this not trying to stop that type of activity in our community comes back from slave times when, you know, we wasn't going to tell the master about nothing one of our brothers or sisters did. And that type of mentality still kind of exists in our neighborhoods wherein we see the drug pushers. We see the young ones that's doing this or the ones that's doing it, but no one will tell on them. They let them do that. And we see the violence, and we know why the violence is happening. So, you know, these type of changes in our community, we, again, have to come together and clean up our communities the same way. When I mean clean it up, not only the violence, but clean it up with all these different people that's not members of our community coming in there just taking the gold out of there every day. And we can't blame them for wanting to be business people. But what we're saying is the New Africa Business Association of Washington, D.C., we are about promoting African-American businesses, promoting them, getting them to network with one another, where they may be able to help one another progress, do commerce together. This is what it's about, because our youth need to see these type of examples out here. The young folks need to see these type of examples out here so they'll know that their goals, the things that they want to do, don't have to be limited to certain categories, that they can get into different type of businesses and enjoy a type of freedom that very few have enjoyed. You know, I know Brother Bilal as a man as a financial planner. I've known you 30 years, 40 years, a long time. And I've seen your freedom that you've had moving around in that business as a business person. And I see some others that, you know, we've known that has that freedom. It's not that you don't put the hard work in. That's the example that the youth, the young folks got to see, that you do have to put the hard work in. But the rewards and the benefits of that is far greater than being off every weekend and, you know, being able to have every holiday off in this. For years, people have sacrificed to be able to get to the point to where they're able to really enjoy the rest of their life that they're blessed with, because their family's always been enjoying it. But they wanted to set that example so that their children could see the work and effort that it takes to run businesses. And I don't know, Brother Bilal, we may be able to eventually have something where the youth during the summertime, this is something the city might be able to do, have various business owners let the youth that aspire to do certain things come and work in their businesses during the summer and let the city pay for that, as opposed to going around the city picking up trash and, you know, doing certain things on the playground. These little nonsense, these programs that they don't really be getting into the root of what's going on in the society, the actual activities that are part of the everyday functions that people do every day, close the business for the day. When children, when our youth get involved in stuff like that, it expands their horizon of seeing how what I can do, you know, and the possibilities of what I can do, as well as the business owner sharing things with them. So that part that I wanted to put out there, that's some of the things that to our listeners, that, you know, that the New Africa Business Association is promoting. We're promoting this type of thinking, this type of, these type of activities. And the other thing I wanted to mention, Brother Bilal, before I turn it over to you, as I turn it over to you, I got plenty to say about what's going on over there in the Ukraine, but yeah, you know, it's putting a stress on business, I'll put it that way, immediately. And, you know, ain't no major activity taking place, but just with the thought of it, probably going to go down. We're seeing ripple effects in the economy already. And what's your take on that, my brother?
Yes, Brother Aziz, that is a part. I guess that'll be have to be a part of our general conversation is Ukraine. I have a lot of opinions on that episode or that what's going on in Ukraine, but I think we I'll share it as we go into our show. But I do want to comment though on what you were saying as far as the youth leaving our communities and going elsewhere to find opportunities. Mm-hmm. Brother Rodney, yeah. Let me ask you a question. How many movie theaters do we have in the black community?
Well, when I was coming up, I could always... None that I know of today.
I think that's about the quickest answer we can give is none. How many... nice restaurants. Do we have many clothing stores, male and female? Do we have in the African American communities? How many social halls do we have in our African American communities? How many? You see where I'm going with this? That's why our youth and everyone else leave your community, because when you have a community and there is no business activity, then you have what is called a ghost community.
Mm-hmm.
A ghost community. Anytime you have a community and there is no business activities, you have what is declared a ghost community. And the value of your community is not very high because there is no commerce anywhere in your community. So again, but my thing is that you start there and then you ask yourself, why not put these businesses in the black communities? After all, you're going to go uptown to have somebody to put your clothes in the cleaners. Why not have a cleaners right there in your own community? You're going to go uptown and have your car washed. Why not have a car wash in your own communities? You see, in other words, my thing, you know, I was reading, and I'm constantly reading on the Black Belt and Black Wall Street. And I was reading where the Black Belt and Black Wall Street, both the one out of Tulsa and the Black Belts throughout the United States, they said during segregation, and of course this is when the Black Belt Wall Street was all started, was doing segregation. But they said during the segregation periods, African Americans made more money during that time than any other time in our history. Our dollar bill stayed in our communities most of the time. It circulated constantly in our communities during the times of segregation. The dollar bill started to deplete in the Black Belt Wall Street communities, and that happened around the early 60s at the end of segregation, and when integration started, that's when the Black Belt and the Black Belt throughout this country, the dollar bills start leaving our communities. Because yeah, during integration, most of your upper middle class and your professional Black folks moved out of the Black communities and went to some other communities where they thought it was better for them to live than their own community.
Mm-hmm.
And so more or less abandonment of their own communities, and took their professionals and their business, I would say uptown or some other communities other than their own. And that's why, and that dollar bill started diminishing. And today, the dollar bill don't stay in the Black community no more than a few hours before it goes out of our communities. And that it, so again, it's interesting, and it goes how powerful we were when we was a Black community under segregation, but give us the freedom to integrate with someone else. And our communities are ghost communities. And they're ghost communities because there are no more professional businesses in our communities. But then, too, you won't find too many professional citizens in our communities. We all left the communities, and this was the time of integration, and that is still going on today. So it goes, so yeah. I've said 100 times, at least 100 times or more, that the best investment for the African American is in his own community. Because again, those who are making monies from the African American communities, they may not come directly into our communities, but they come real right on the edge where we can easily get to them and spend our monies with them. So I found that very interesting when I was reading those articles about how successful we were during the hard times. And this is, you're talking about the 1920s and in the 30s and before, when times was bad, it was still lynching us for being too successful, but that didn't stop. That didn't stop the growth and the productivity of our communities, and that was during the time of segregation. It was integration that depleted the dollar bill and the growth of the Black communities, because we thought it would be better to live around someone else other than our own communities. So when you start talking about your youth leaving the communities, and they ain't doing nothing no more than what the professionals who left before they did. And brought the value to the communities. But I would just about bet that if there was movie theaters, if there was the other type of businesses that these youth spend their monies on, and if these businesses was right in their communities, They wouldn't have no reason to leave. I mean, how many apartment buildings?
Right.
How many apartment buildings that we build in the communities where our young folks, once they became of adults, that they could rent and stay in the communities? I don't see any high-rise apartments in the black community, garden apartments that is on. You see, we have to own that ownership thing that you were talking about. When you don't own your own business or your own properties, and you out here renting, you're not really 100% business owner. You're in business, but most of your revenue is going to someone else because you have to rent from them. And when you have to rent from them, you have to abide by whatever rules they give you. Your rent might still, payments might be this. And you know, I was looking at a situation. I went back to Delaware this week. Matter of fact, just yesterday, I was up in Milford, Delaware. And they got a favorite spot there. An African American started a seafood restaurant, and he's been doing pretty good in it now for about. I know I've been going there for almost a year ever since I've been going back and forth. But at the same time, I go there and I can't help but because he's in the shopping center. And nice part of the shopping center. So I know overhead has got to be sort of high. And I am seeing, then your customers, 90% of the customers that I saw coming through there was African Americans. I'm saying to myself, why not have this business right in the black communities? Why have it here in the Caucasian community and this expensive shopping center and your seafood restaurant? You're basically selling fish lunches.
Yeah.
Why not do that right there in your own community where they don't have to drive that far to get their fish a dinner? And I myself, like I said, I like going there because the food is good. But still, why not have that business right in your own community as to where you could own the restaurant because of the cost of ownership in your community is not that expensive. It's not as expensive as going up into that shopping center that you're paying all of that rent. And most of your income is going towards the rent. So again, that's just an example of having businesses, and because there are no businesses, very few businesses in the African American community, it's got to be one of the best investments that we as African Americans can make. And so that question you was talking about is an interesting question. But like I said, when you see a situation where history says that our biggest opportunities was during the time of segregation. Our worst opportunity was during the time of integration. And those worst opportunities are still with us today. So I said, man, that is, I couldn't get away from, I realized that, but after reading it, and I said, man, it is so true. Segregation, and when we was forced to be under in our own communities and being with each other. We was very successful at that time. But when somebody says
real good,
we did better at any time in our history. And yeah. we know how powerful the Black Belt Wall Street was at the time. You know, Brother Aziz, a lot of folks just don't realize. See, there was two Black Belts.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the two, one being the National Black Belt Wall Street and one being Black Wall Street. Mm-hmm. No, I'm saying Black Wall Street in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it went through that destruction and it was the success of Black Belt or the Greenwood District Black Belt in Tulsa.
Yeah.
And then using the wealth that they had to spread and their monies went into just about all the states in the South, starting from Alabama, all the way through the South, all the way up to Chicago and New York. Some of the most famous organizations in history came because of the Black Belt and the Black Belt districts that was financed through Black Wall Street, Tulsa. You're talking about, and I can't tell you how powerful and the powerful businesses that Tulsa or the Greenwood District had. I mean, they had, I can't think of, they, you know, they had their own airports, their own airplanes. I mean, you name it. There was no kind of business. And in other words, when there was a business, plan, they didn't take their business plans from anyone else in the United States or anywhere and anyone else in the world. They made their own business plans. They had their own banks. They had their own insurance companies, their own hospitals, their own libraries, their own, I mean, they own whatever a community needs to own, their own hotels. They own, and then of course, this is a Tulsa, but then too, you start talking about what happened
Harlem.
You start talking Harlem. Well, you think the first we can start with Marcus Garvey.
Marcus Garvey got his start
from the Black Belt District. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad. His start in the Nation of Islam that was built. All from the Black Belt District, the Cotton Club. All from the Black Belt and the financing that was done through the Black Wall Street and the Black Belt Wall Street and Black Wall Street. And the professionals who headed all of that, and one of the biggest ones was I lost his name again, and it really hurts me, but I'll come back with him. But but this was during the time of segregation. It's when all of this, these tremendous powers, and not to mention Malcolm X, the Nation of Islam, all of that was financed through the Black Belt District. So again, that Black Belt District financing by Black Wall Street, and we know Black Wall Street was able to finance it because The African Americans, along with the Native Americans, who owned Tulsa before the white supremacists took it from them, the portion that they was able to keep was done by the African Americans, who was able to at least have a patent on some of the land. And of course, the portion that they had was still what everybody thought was a river, but it was never a river. It was an ocean of oil. And that ocean of oil is still there. And the thing about it, going all the way back, you go back to really what was called, before it was called Oklahoma, it was called the Indian Territory. That's where they placed the Indians after they took all of their lands and all up in the Midwest, all up in the Dakotas and all those states that they have ran the Indians out of. They sent them...
Well, that Trail of Tears.
Well, presenting all of that Wounded Me. I mean, there's so much that you can go back to how they took the land. But nevertheless, after it was all taken, they replaced in a territory that was supposed to be a doomed territory. When you start talking about the plains of, and that's all they call it was the plains. As a matter of fact, that's what they call it when they put the Indians, and along with the slaves who joined the Indians, and the Indians allowed them to come with them. They didn't make slaves out of them. They made the slaves who came with them, African-American slaves that came with them, they made them a part of their a village. And and you take Tulsa. Tulsa was made up of a tribe that came from the Creek Indians, and that tribe was called a Paramount tribe. And the Paramon tribe was a mix-up of African-American, Caucasian-American, Native American, but they was all married and related. It was a family. A family all mixed up of different breeds. And that's what made up Tulsa. And they were telling me that's what made Tulsa. And these, and they said that this, territory was Oklahoma today, but during that time, again, Indian territories, and that was supposed to have been a disaster on these peoples. But when they got there, Almighty God showed them that they had landed and the biggest, richest oil fields in the world, bigger than Saudi Arabia could ever be. And this belonged to Native Americans and the African Americans and the Caucasians, but especially there in Tulsa. But these oil fields and this oil was all over Oklahoma, and we know today all over the state. But at some point, it belonged all to those displaced Indians who were supposed to go out there and perish. But they were blessed. Mm-hmm. Of course, he was blessed by the Creator to be some of the richest peoples in the world. But of course, we know what happened with that. The Caucasians came in and came in with their disruption. And most of the Native Americans who had already fought these Caucasians, they just did not want to go through that terrible war with them again. So they simply turned the lands over to these folks. That's why Oklahoma today, most of it, other than in the Indian nations, white folks came in, and now they have not only Tulsa, but they have taken the entire state, and they got up their oil wells throughout the state that was supposed to have been the land for those who just didn't stand a chance and at least had some land that they could do. It wasn't supposed to be very productive land. But again, we can, so again, you can see that it goes back to, like I said, during the time of segregation, as to where we were all away from those who hate us. I'll put it that way. That was our best productive times ever in our history. So you asked me about now what's going on now with this here war, or this thing that's going on there in Russia.
Yeah, and them Ukrainians, you know.
And those Ukrainians. But you see, we keep saying Russia and the Ukrainians. There is no difference between the Ukrainians and the Russians. They all are Russians. They've always been Russians.
Yeah.
The Ukrainians just took and broke away from Russia. But they all are Russians. Now I ask you, all of these Europeans who come to the, you see, when you're in Russia, you are a Russian. When you're in Ukraine, you're Ukrainian. When you're in France, you're Frenchman. When you're in Germany, you're German. But when you come to, when these here Caucasians come to the United States, they're white folks. They're white Americans. They're no longer Frenchmen. They're no longer Russians. They're no longer wherever they come from in Europe. When they get here, they become white Americans. And I am seeing those. And so when they get here, so when we get here and we start talking about oppressed people's white supremacy. All of these folks that we see that come over here, like I said, they're all kinds of different nationalities, but they get here and they become white folks. And so my thing is that this thing of Ukraine and Russia and then look like Europe is all alarmed because one white nation could be at ready to fight another white nation. And it could go on just like back in the 30s when Hitler made, all white folks again fighting each other for whatever dominance they're fighting on. But when they come to the America, they all become one white community. So if these folks want to fight and kill each other, I'm trying to see, where is it our problem? Where do we, because we've already been to Europe, and we've already so-called fought the wars that we thought, but when we got back here, those same folks, the same Germans that we were fighting, when they got to the United States, They became our masters. When the Jewish folks that we went over and found in the camps because these African Americans who found them and helped them in freedom and all, but when they got to the United States, they became white folks. But the black man came back and he again became their servants. So this
so-called
thing,
second class
citizen. So when you ask me about what do I think about what's going on in a country that have never shown African Americans nothing, when they get to the United States, they become white supremacists. They're no longer Frenchmen. They are no longer Germans. They are no longer Jews. They are no longer. They become white supremacists. And being a white supremacist, they have the privilege that this country give white folks. So yes, I don't. As a war veteran. As a war veteran, and not only that, we're talking about marching here in a couple of days, going on March the 6th, and I repeat it, on March the 6th, on March the 3rd to March the 6th, we will have the John Lewis Jubilee March. The John Lewis Jubilee March. That John Lewis Jubilee March, white folks are telling African Americans in this country, after we went through the we went through segregation for so long in 1965, like I said, in the 60s, that's when the integration started, and that's when our communities start losing their value. And so I am saying... what are we supposed to do when, again, anyone who comes from Ukraine, Russia, or any other part of Europe, that you go over there and you say you're going to liberate these people? And then after you give your blood and guts and many African Americans die, they come back and these folks are your superiors. Immediately. Now, it doesn't take them no time. As soon as they get here, they become, and if they're Caucasians, they become white Americans. And white folks look at them as white folks because in this country you're either going to be black or white. And these folks become white, and because they become white, they get all the privileges of being white. So, what do we do? And that's where we're going to... all the mics are open. Everything that you and I are talking about, Brother Aziz, our listeners hearing us. And at the same time, our listeners, their mics are open as to where now they can join us. Because, again, we're going through some times as to where African Americans do need to communicate with each other because we could be at a world war. Or we could be in a situation as to where they may want to send a bunch of us. And you know what? When we're war veterans, we already know when they come to battle, they're going to send black folks out there first. You are the first line warrior.
Yeah.
And so if anybody gets killed first, it's going to be you. So, I think so. Again, with all of the information we've been talking about, our best times was doing segregation as far as business. how the black belt black belt district, the black belt Wall Street district and black belt Wall Street, how powerful our dollars were in circulating, and we was able to make many African Americans states throughout the South and northern cities and states. We made each other independent. But again, integration with the white community. And that white community is not, that white community is everybody that comes here from Europe. And these Europeans, if we go there today, if we went to Russia today, they wouldn't like us. Wouldn't want, have nothing to do with us. If we went to Ukraine, wouldn't want to have a damn thing to do with us. And so we don't even have to mention many of the other white countries.
Mm-hmm.
But we do know that when they come to the United States, they're, you know, again, they're no longer Germans. They're no longer Frenchmen. They're no longer Polacks. They are all white Americans. And when they become white Americans, they are in charge of us. So we're going to open our mics up. And again, best thing I can say, we're going to open our mics up, and we welcome your comments. Brothers and sisters, the mics are open, and we welcome your comments. Our mics are open. All right, but then, Brother Aziz, we will, I guess we will be more entertained.
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, indeed. I'll go right ahead.
Hello, hello. How you guys doing today? I hope you guys are staying warm. It is icy cold here in DeSoto, Texas. This is Karen Reese, the executive producer of the Reese.
Miss Reed, how are you this evening?
I'm great. I am great. I got 4 days left. Can't wait to get past this weekend, but I am doing amazing, and I just appreciate you guys allowing me to come on and just speak to you guys. And I was just listening to some of the things you were saying, and, you know, from my thoughts, I think we're going to have to instill some things in our kids. I think, you know, we're older and set in our ways. Kind of things. I think we're going to have to start breeding things in our kids as far as the power of their voices, the power to stand up, the power to make change. We're going to have to breed it into our kids in order for them to be raised up with a different mindset, you know, of how valuable their voices are. And so I just think maybe putting together programs and any type of program that promotes morale and who you are, I'm black, I'm proud, and just that kind of stuff, I think that will help with them speaking up more, with our people speaking up more. But I'm excited about the march. I haven't decided if I can make it. I wish I could. I may try to fit it in some kind of way. I've never did a march before, and I think that will be phenomenon just to be in the presence of so many people coming together for one cause. And I don't know, I might try to jump in the car if I get past this premiere. I might try to jump in the car and make it down there just to see what that feels like, you know.
Yes, Miss Reed, and let me also say, Miss Reed, and say on with us, Miss Reed, and continue to talk as long as you want to. But let me just say before we go too far. Now, Miss Reed is the Black Belt Wall Street and Black Wall Street. She's doing a documentary on that. As a matter of fact, she's doing an entire film on the history of Black Belt Wall Street and Black Wall Street, the Greenwood District. And so every Thursday, we're having a combined show because we're trying to assist each other in building the Black Belt and Black Wall Street, Greenwood District. And so I would ask all of the participants that hear me this evening to take the information that Nick Reed is about to give you and participate in her show tomorrow. And her show will start at 7 o'clock Eastern time, and I think it's 6 o'clock standard time. So, Miss Reed, with that said, I'm gonna turn it back over to you, and you can share a lot of information on our participating with you every Thursday, and until we make certain that your historical information is all put together. Miss Reed.
Okay, so you guys are on a call, on a radio call, and so I have a platform where we can be live on the internet, on Facebook, where people can actually see your faces and see who's talking. Okay. And so we've been trying to, you know, go live and share this information, especially about the march. If we don't do nothing but come together and do one big show and talk about how important it is for people to come and support this march, those who don't know about it, if you don't know about it, you know, we encourage them to share this video. But we need this out. I haven't seen anything come across my timeline as far as anybody sponsoring any ads or anything telling about this march. I don't know if it's something that's supposed to be kept secret so you don't have problems with anybody trying to shut you down or anything, but I haven't seen anything on Facebook, Instagram, or anything about this march. So, and it's not to say that it's not anything out there. I'm just saying I don't know how much money anybody put in the marketing in order to get this word out, but I haven't seen it. Nobody shared it. And so I'm just wondering who all knows about it. And so people don't come and participate because they don't know about it. And even if they can't show up, you know, are they creating a live stream or something where people can actually see it and be able to share it, you know, virtually? You know, so I don't know this information, but I do believe that it's important for us to do a live and share this information about the march if we don't do it but one time, you know. I know you guys come on every week. We don't have to do it every week, but we can just do it like a special program. When something special is going on and you need to get the word out, we can have you. I want you guys to know you have another avenue to get the word out, and you are more than welcome to utilize my platform on Facebook where we can share this information. And that's all I was trying to do, is give you guys another avenue to share the information about what's going on in our world. And so, but if you would like to be on the broadcast on Thursday, now it's going to be very important because I do have another interview. Somebody's interviewing me about the documentary, and I'm thinking that it's around that 7 o'clock time. I don't know for sure, but I still can run the broadcast and you guys can talk, even though if I'm on another broadcast because I have two computers. But if you would like to be on this show on tomorrow and talk about the importance of this march, you can email me. I got so many emails, but I'll give you this one, Karen, K-A-R-E-N, Karen 23_05@yahoo.com. You email me, and when I send out the link, I will send you the link. It can be up to 10 people on the platform that can talk, and then I connect different pages. So when it goes live in all these different pages. So I'll connect my personal page. I have some sports pages. I have some other, my husband's page and Mr. Biden's wife's page. I'll connect those pages. So when we go live, it'll go live on all those pages at the same time, and that way it'll get out more. But we need people to watch it and share it, because Facebook, you know, they're getting intelligent on stuff, you know. So, but if more people engage in it, they'll let it run, and, you know, more people share it and stuff like that. So I just want to let you guys know that this is available anytime you need a special message to go out on Facebook or YouTube. You're more than welcome to use my platform. And that's all
thank
I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Reese. And again, that's what I mean, brothers and sisters. And Ms. Reese made a wonderful point. When it comes to important information that we should be sharing with each other, we don't have many platforms as to where we can communicate with our communities. And because we don't have the TVs and the newspapers and others, although we do have our own one of the oldest newspapers that's been circulating in African-American communities now for just about 100 years, and that is the Muslim Journal. And so, again, that is a wonderful paper to advertise. And like you said, I'm certain that paper has information about the Jubilee March that's coming up March the 6th. But we need to have, but there are not very many avenues as to where we have information that we can get, that we should have in our communities to keep each other well informed. So, yes, a New Africa Business Association. And now Ms. Reed Association, and those avenues. And let me just say this. We talk about March the 6th, March, but you see, it's so important this year. We're living in the most dangerous times, I suppose, of our life, because during World War II, after around 1947, most of the wars had ended. So most of us was very young, and many of us wasn't even born during those times. But here it is. We're talking about Russia, one of the most powerful nations in the entire world. And the weapons that Russia have is strong enough, just like the weapons the United States have, and I know a few other countries. They got weapons that can just about, some believe, that can destroy the entire world. So just how mad these barbarians are and how vicious they can get, we don't know. But as African Americans, we know that they can become extremely vicious, extremely vicious. And so that's what as far as avenues of communications. And so that's why it would be so important now in a couple of more weeks. We can have a huge gathering in Selma, Alabama, and the issues that we're talking about right now can be addressed live with each other through a very, very large gathering. So not only will that march represent our past, but it's also going to represent our present. And so, yes, March the 6th, March the 3rd to March the 6th, most of you have the link that you can go to. I sent the link And all you have to do is open it up, and you will see information about that march, along with pictures about some of the devastations that went on during the time of the original march, when Dr. King and Congressman Lewis and millions of others had to go and sacrifice many lives. And today, 2022, we're going to be making the same march, and the march is at that time, it was about integration and the right to vote. We fought for that, and we got that. Today, these white supremacists, and we know these white supremacists are Europeans from all over Europe, are saying they don't want African Americans to have the right to vote, even though we are the true Americans. But again, do you see anybody telling white folks that they don't have the right to vote? And many of them, like I said, can't even speak English. But because when they got to the United States, they were no longer Europeans. They was white Americans, and they had the privilege of white folks and their way of life and all the privileges that this country give white folks. So that's why it's so important that this is the biggest event right now that's going on in the African-American community is our John Lewis Jubilee March. There'll be other events, but I'm saying this is the one that we have right now. And so that's why we invite you to be at this march if you can. And like I said, information on that march, you can go to the link. Again, I'll share the website with you, and I am going to get off this phone, and I am going to give our callers a chance again to make their comments, because, again, that's why we have these open mics, is to see how our communities, and I'm looking on our calling list now. I know we have about 5 different states normally have a larger audience. We have about 10 different states, but the ones we have here, we can share our information, and if we see where it's necessary, and it is necessary to share this information, because if you don't tell others about joining us March the 6th, Selma, Alabama. But African Americans need to talk, because, like I said, we're living in some very, very dangerous times. And what do we do about the situation where all these Europeans want to kill each other, but these same Europeans want to discriminate against us when they get here to the United States? So our mics are open, brothers and sisters, if you can hear us. We're certainly interested in hearing you. Our mics are open, and we welcome your comments. Brothers and sisters, our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Good evening, everyone. This is Joyce Williams calling from Oklahoma City. Hopefully everyone's having a very nice day, even though the weather's inclement. We're still in good spirits.
I'm hoping
I'm keeping with your conversation, but I do have a concern. What is going on with the threats to the HBCUs, guys?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a, as we used to say back in the day, that's a cry and shame.
Yeah.
Because there was a time we couldn't get education anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think about these things, a lot of the things that we are experiencing, as far as from my observation, a lot of the things that we are experiencing here in the United States is you know, kind of parallel, kind of coinciding with what's going on over there with the Russian way of thinking.
Same.
You know, all covert, this underhand, mom and them called it underhand, undermined kind of things. We've gone through too much in this country to keep getting all these threats. We're not their problem. We've never been their problem. Whenever they had a problem, they knew who they could turn to help them to solve it. Now, they keep this up, they won't be able to turn to their African-American and get some assistance. They're going to be on their own, and that's going to be a very bad day for them. I thank you for your time.
Again, our mics are open. We welcome your comments, brothers and sisters. Our mics are open. All right, Brother Aziz, we will continue our conversation here. Ms. Williams, we certainly welcome your comments. And you're right, as far as the monies that's going through our black colleges, you know, the federal government, when they was allocating monies for colleges and universities, and I thought I heard them wrong when I heard them say this, but they allocated $20 million to the black colleges. And I'm saying, wait a minute, $20 million? $20 million, I mean, one college would need more than that. But you're talking about all the colleges? Brothers and sisters, you see how they treat us? I mean, these are our universities. No, I mean, are you joking? $20 million? That won't even pay for the average dormitory services in one of the colleges and the food services in one. One college would need more money than that. So, yes, Ms. Williams, our concerns, because remember, taxpayers' monies, because let's say they were sending monies to a white university. You think they're gonna anybody gonna send any amount to any white university, and the amount is gonna be $20 million? So again, it goes back to what we were talking about as far as the history books, and we're talking about the history books of Black Wall Street, and they said again that the best time, our best economical times, was during the times of segregation. That's when our monies and our dollar bill in our communities was much more profitable, was during the time of segregation. It was during the time of integration that our communities went broke. So again, brothers and sisters, like I said, our mics are open. We welcome your comments. And if you have a comment, we welcome your comments. You see, we don't... Go right ahead. Go right ahead. We welcome your comments.
Assalamualaikum.
Walaikum.
Assalam.
This is Sister Ahima in Tulsa, Oklahoma. How's everyone doing?
Great, sister.
Thank you. I was looking for, you know, my take, Brother Bilal, is a little different than yours, I guess, than most people. And I was looking for the Bible verse. I thought it was in Hosea, but in Hosea, I guess I'm pronouncing it correctly, 4:8, it says, "My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge because they have rejected knowledge, and I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me." That's not what I was looking for. I was looking for the one that says, go into your dwellings until the indignation is over. Go into your dwellings for a little while until the indignation is over. And what it was referring to, it was referring to the ignorant people destroying each other. And so that's what I see. I see a famine coming that we were warned about. That Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad warned us about that, about the hard times when the stores would not have anything on the shelves, and we see that coming. And I think we, in preparing for that time, if we just store up and let those folk, whoever they are, fight each other and destroy each other. We just get out of the way. And then when they done, then we can come back out. That's the way I see it.
And you know what? Go right ahead. Go right ahead, sister.
Yes, sir. I also wanted to comment on Sister Joyce Williams' comment about the colleges. I know she's not surprised. She's so intelligent. I know she's not surprised at what is going on. but remember... In 1867, when the Congress, all white Congress, of course, decided that they were going to let us have these land-grant colleges, there were three exceptions that they had. They said you could have these colleges, but there were three things you cannot teach. One was the science of mating or marriage. One was the science of business, and the other one was the science of warfare. And you remember when back in the day when we had AT&T, had all these colleges that were technical schools, you know, most of it was like home economics and farming and all that kind of good stuff. And so we kind of got away from that because once we got opened up so we could do the business and, you know, and all these other things, we kind of got away from it. They still haven't let us in on the science of warfare. But our people have that anyway because they have taken us into the wars. And we've seen brothers and sisters on the line telling us exactly what's going on with this 5G because they've done that same thing in other countries. And they've used our people to set up all that mess. So we kind of, if we're listening, we kind of know what's going to happen. We just have to be prepared for it because you can't make a change until you... you have to give up something, and you got to turn, you know, you got to slow down. I mean, there's always been a famine. I mean, we see it all throughout the Bible. We've seen times when there were famines, and with Joseph, you know, there has to be a time of storage, and I think it's happening again here in the 21st century. So thanks for letting me share, and I'll be happy to hear your comments, Brother Bilal. You're so open. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Sister Rahima, Brother Aziz and I was discussing earlier just what you were talking about, and neither one of us, I don't think, wanted to say openly, but it's the truth, what you just said, because again, like I said, all of these Europeans come from whatever country they come from, whether it's a Russia, or whether it's from France, whether it's from Germany, or wherever, but they're from those countries until they get to the United States. When they get to the United States, they're no longer Frenchmen. They don't declare themselves as Frenchmen anymore. They don't declare themselves as Germans anymore. They don't declare themselves as Russians or what have you anymore. They declare themselves as white peoples. And why? Why would you want to get to the United States and be a white person rather than come to the United States and say, I'm a Russian, I'm a Frenchman, I'm a German, I'm a Pole, I'm from Poland, or wherever in the United States, or wherever in Europe you're from, why can't you be, when you get here, be one of those countries? No, when you get here,
good question.
I am an American, and I'm a white American. I'm a white American, and the same peoples that, and they'll start discriminating against you. I remember what you were saying And I remember some of the stories as a war veteran that some of our veteran brothers talked about that was that fought in Germany, World War II, and how
yes,
when they came home, these same Germans that they was fighting now have moved to the United States, and they could go right into the white restaurants and be treated just like ordinary white folks, but black folks, you might be lynched if you took a drink from a white fountain. So your comment about what do we do now, being that all of these folks are really white folks as far as African Americans are concerned, because that's what they are when they are in the United States. But then, too, that's what they are when they're also in their own country. It's no different. But what do we do? Because this war is it's going to kick – something over there is going to kick off. And now what do we do after fighting so many wars for this country? And we are the true Americans. We've been here. We've been here for hundreds of years. This is our country. We don't have no other land to stand on other than right here in America. So we're going to be right here in America, and we're going to stand. This is where we're going to make our stand, right here in America. We're going to protect America. But when it comes to the rest of these fightings that these folks are proposing to do, and they're all doing it for greed, money, power, their own power. We don't fit into any of that power. We don't fit into any of that economical whatever they think they're going to gain or lose. We don't fit into any of that. So, again, do we lose our life? Do we become disabled? What is it that we are supposed to do at this time? And they're telling us as Americans, you can't even do it. We're going to take your voting rights away from you, African Americans, which means you're not even citizens of the country. So, again, this is what I mean about it's time for African Americans to communicate. It is time for African Americans to communicate because, yes, there is destruction all around us. But we have to circle up. When do we circle the wagon and protect our communities? Brothers and sisters, our mics are open. We don't have the answers. But collectively, we can find the answer. So our mics are open. We welcome your comments. We welcome your comments. Our mics are open.
Well, that's one of the reasons I was saying that we maybe should look at this as sort of like a relationship. And we're going to be going before the judge, and a couple of weeks ago when we had Queen Mother on, and she was speaking about the United Nations, and since that is a world court, and since the world is involved in our plights, then perhaps we should consider taking our case, I'll say, to the United Nations rather than this domestic stuff that we deal with here on a daily basis. And we need to, I'm serious when I say we need to start making a list. And we need to list any and every category that we can think of and our explanations of why we feel the way that we feel. Because as my brother was saying a few moments ago in regards to people come in. That's where I will be talking about when I speak of those who are sworn in versus those who are born in the United States of America. And we need to, and since they want to rewrite the history and rewrite the books and do all these things, then we need to start putting together some type of committees who sit in on the rewriting, because we need to know what questions are on those tests that are given to people who come in for citizenship. How many of those questions even speak of the African American? How many of them? So when they, I mean, this is just me because I haven't seen the test because I didn't have to take one, but if you're not on the test, then chances are you what they have already been told about us, then you don't feel that you have any need for us. You're just, you know, like you check the white box and you keep it moving. Because, and I'm going to be honest and serious and sincere, it really hurts my feelings when I see some of these people whose parents migrated here, say, in the 40s and 30s and all like that, and now their children, these people are ambassadors. And they're doing, I mean, not take anything from them. It's a good thing, but at the same time, don't hinder us from having the same opportunities. It's too late to look back, but moving forward, we should all be out here on the same wavelength, doing the same things together as a society. But it's like, it's going to take a lot of work. We're back to, as they say, ground zero. We're back to square one. Because this whole thing now, you guys, is all messed up. Because greed has taken away all consciousness. We're just grabbing, because we have not received our due. Anyone can come over here, we push to the back. But now it's time for us to come forward and stay forward. I really feel this.
Oh, yeah. We welcome your comments. Like I said, brothers and sisters, our mics are open. Everybody who's on this station, everyone, and we ask you to come on one at a time, but everybody's mics, no one is on mute. Everyone can speak. We just ask you to do it one at a time. But we welcome your comments, and our mics are open. And again, we welcome your comments.
Bernice Bynum Swan. And hello, my dear brother.
My director, go right ahead. Hey, Ms. Swan, what have you?
Go ahead on.
I want to share, as you know, in the book that I have written, and I'm still putting more into that book, along with my working with a curriculum in Black, not just African American, but Black history, because there is a difference. The African American history is just the very end of Black history, where we are now. So we know we have to start with our beginnings in order to get to where we are now. My books reflect that. And I'm working with Facebook to do just the same thing. Start from the beginning, the first man, the first woman, bring ourselves up to the present, and then we'll have a better picture of what this is all about. In the book and in the YouTube, it is called The Black People and Bible Prophecy. So since the young lady previously mentioned the Bible, and, of course, my research is on the Bible as a Black history book, because it actually is. Most people do not understand that. Some people, unfortunately, think it's for white people, but that's because they don't read it. It collects dust. But when you study it, it is amazing that from Genesis to Revelation, it is reflecting our experience. I am not saying that other people cannot look in the Bible and find their own experience. That's fine. But as for Black people, God showed me that this is your story. Write it for your people. Write it for all people. So So I went to my book, and I just pulled a few things out of it that I'll give you an idea of how the Bible shows our predicament at present. For example, in Deuteronomy, if you would read all of Deuteronomy chapter 28, our entire story is in that one chapter. But in particular, I want to show you Deuteronomy verse 1, and it shows that God is saying to his people, if you follow my ways, you're going to be blessed. If you follow the world, you're going to be cursed. The world does not love you. And as long as you try to maintain this relationship of love with the world that doesn't love you, you're going to suffer some dire consequences. And the Lord says, follow me. I'm going to set you on high above all the nations of the earth. But you've got to follow my ways and stop following man's ways. Then when we go to another one that I like is this is also Deuteronomy, and this is also that 28th chapter. If you go, I believe it's to the very last verse, it tells you your God is going to bring you into Egypt again, only this time Egypt is not the country in Africa. It is America. It is the Western world. And you will go there by ships, by the way that your ancestors never knew of. And that's because the so-called New World was a new world. It did not exist in ancient times. And you will go there and you're going to be sold unto your enemy as slaves, both men and women, and no one is going to take you out of that slavery. No human is going to be interested in you to get you out of the predicament that you're in. And then when you go to Acts, which is Acts chapter 7, verse 6, it says you're going to remain in that bondage for a little more than 400 years. That is Acts 7, verse 6. When you go to Hosea, this is chapter 4, verse 6. My people are going to be destroyed for their lack of knowledge because they have neglected knowledge and they have rejected me as their God. And seeing that they have rejected me as their God, I am going to forget their children. And then when you go to, again, Deuteronomy is awesome. If you read the whole thing, you read your whole history right there in one chapter. But Deuteronomy 28, verse 37 says, while you're in that predicament, more than a predicament, that slavery of 400 plus years, you are going to face stereotypes, prejudices, and name calling. All of those things must be suffered. When you go to, and I'm trying to abbreviate, I know other people want to speak, but when you go to, let me see. When you go to, I like this one, and then I'll give others a chance to speak. Our predicament is not going to come from mere mortals. We don't have the ability. Either white people don't have it, nor do we have it. According to the Bible, our predicament is going to be solved by God himself after he gets sick and tired of our enemies. He says, I am going to get the revenge. I am going to get my people out of their oppression. We can do these other things, don't get me wrong, but we are mere mortals. God is saying this thing is too big for any of you. I am going to, excuse my expression, kick butt. And he's going to do it in a powerful way, as Zechariah chapter 1, verse 5 says, I was a little displeased with my people, but these heathen have gone too far with it. And they, and so he goes on to say, because of that, that's where he's going to step in. Nothing people can do about it. And all that stuff about people having these weapons to destroy the earth, he says, the earth is mine. It's going to abide forever. I don't know what you fools are talking about. And that's so right. He says it, doesn't he? He says, your weapons. They can't do any harm to you. The earth is mine and the fullness thereof, and they that dwell therein. So they can take those weapons, and you know what, I'll be nice tonight. And, of course, we know that in Amos, this is chapter 9, verses 14 and 15, I'm going to bring my people out of their captivity, and they are going to build the waste that other people have created, and they are going to inhabit their own lands, and I'm going to put them back into their own lands, and there they will drink the wine thereof, build their own houses and inhabit them, and dwell in peace forevermore with all the fruit of them. So enjoy your Bibles, brothers and sisters, because if you enjoy your Bibles, you're enjoying you because you're reading your own black history. God bless you all.
Mm-hmm. Mike, mm-hmm. Sherelle, right. Brothers and sisters, we welcome your comments. Thanks so much, Ms. Lloyd. Our mics are open. Our brothers and sisters, we welcome your comments.
Yes, Brother Bilal, Brother Aziz again here. I wanted to talk about or tell you about some local news about another type of racism that's taking place in Virginia, our next-door neighbor here from Maryland. And that is the African-American had markers in places around the state where there were historical events that had taken place. Well, the new Republican governor has decided that no longer will they fund taking care of any of those historical markers or anything like that. Or I'm not sure if they're going to pull them up or whatever. And these markers are where historical things took place with African Americans, some places where they were born, other events where certain acts of breaking away from the slave master and things like their rebellious acts. And it's some upheaval about that because a lot of people were warned that this new guy that was the governor of Virginia that got put in, he was a Donald Trump type of individual because he worked for a major corporation wherein he was able to walk away from that corporation when he left with over $500 million. So he paid for all his campaign and all that in Virginia, you know, and going through the network in Virginia, and that, I wouldn't doubt he didn't have to put out that much money campaigning in that state when he already knew, like, Donald Trump, you know, the mentality of the people, you know, that's what they call fueling the fire, the mentality of the people. And right. That is one of the big things that Mrs. Swan and other sisters have referred to tonight in terms of the Almighty God coming and freeing us and helping us get out of this bondage and that. And it's a change of mind that has to take place. A sincere change of mind and love for one another, because that's the success that we see among all the people. But Almighty God is bringing us the truth. That's what everybody says. That's what the Bible says, sets you free. So we know these things. If one researching and looking for the truth in that, that's what the reward they get when they research and they hear about things that they're not quite don't understand, things that they wouldn't even look at before. Is it what it is, or is that just something that we shouldn't waste our time on? And this is what Almighty God will want us to do, whatever your belief is, to go in search of the truth on a sincere effort to look for it, and you'll be rewarded when you find it. It is such a freedom, because a freedom means a free dome. That's why they say free dome. A free mind. Mm-hmm. Your mind, that's the dome, your mind. So that's what we want to free up. And it's only free because Almighty God sent us the message, as the sisters in there said, that is going to free us up.
That's where,
you know, we stand today. If that's we want to be free and be able to move about in the land and work together, because that's how come we all the listeners are on here, that come on, they understand that. They understand that type of thinking. And that's the reward there. We understand the type of thinking we're talking about, working together, promoting an idea. Not, we're not talking about, we don't have to talk about money. We're just promoting an idea for the betterment of us all.
Right.
And that's why success, that's what anyone that believes in the Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Al-Islam, they know that's where the success is. Freeing your dome up and then being able to have work with the community, have community life, praying together, whether you're in a church or a masjid or a synagogue, praying together with people think like you, and then go out and work. And that's how come we are able to communicate with one another. We may be different in our Christian, Muslim, and Jewish beliefs in certain ways, but we all believe in the creator of the heavens and the earth. So, and believing in that and sincerity in what you believe in, you know that there's success in working with other people that's trying and want to do the right thing, upright people. And that's where our success will come in, brothers and sisters. And I see that happening with us because a lot of us are maybe not young, and we may be set in our ways, but we have an understanding about what things that we need to do. And we need to share that with our youth. As Brother Bilal and I talked earlier about having the cities where we live in, maybe instead of funding money for the youth programs where they're cleaning up the streets and doing things around painting this and that, to be able to actually have an idea of something they would like to be when they grow up and have people in our community, African Americans in our community, have them to be able to come into their business maybe 2, 3, 4 hours a day and learn what this business is about and let them be really sincere. Come to work dressed up like a business person, you know, to the best of their ability. And the city can pay for stuff like that. We don't need them picking up trash or nothing like that for the summertime. Give them something they can be active in and be proud of because they're actually in society in a work environment that's a producing environment, a production that is part of the daily life that takes place every day, not a temporary thing. So they, at a young age, they get an idea what that business is like, what they want to be a part of, and it expands their mind, and at the same time, it allows them to think about whether they want to do that or not. But I think that's a better way of our city spending some money, trying to give children something to do in the summer to make some money, as opposed to having them picking up trash and cleaning this neighborhood up and that neighborhood up. And that's just some more input I wanted to put in there to our listeners and that out there. And thank you for that.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Brother Aziz, also, you know, if we check with that Mully Foundation, I don't know if any of you guys were able to look at that when I had shared it with some of you on Facebook.
Yes.
But that man, he was the power of one. So, you know, in regards to getting some transferable skills into these children, because somebody going to pick up the trash and clean the trash and clean the places. You know, like King said, we take pride in whatever work we do. But, you know, another thing that we need to
be vigilant
about also, I don't know why, well, I do, but we won't go into that right now. Because, I mean, all the animosity that these people are, we know, but we don't say because we refuse to, that they are all the obstacles. They got President Biden like he's climbing, I mean, the rugged side of the mountain. You know, they're planning, I guess it's around March 2nd or something like that, this huge I guess it's truckers. They're gonna be. I mean, they're gonna just be. I guess stopping on the highways or being blocked or something. I don't know what's going on with that, but I guess it's gonna be some type of boycott. The same type thing that was going on a couple of weeks ago there in Canada. Why do we? What's the necessity? What is wrong? Why are we? Building up all of this anger and evil towards each. I mean, maybe this is the sign, as the old folks say, sign of the times. But I tell you what, they say it's going to get better. I mean, worse before it gets better. So we just need to keep our heads to the sky, brothers and sisters, and stay vigilant with each other. And yes, and as Brother Bilal had said a while ago, no, we need to tighten the wagons, because we should already have them forming. So we need to start making that circle real tight, because in the nucleus where things are going on, that's where we're going to need the brain, as you had said a while ago. That's where the brain will be, in the tight circle, and then we will just circle out from there. It is time to do it. The time to do it is now. Thank you very much.
I'm glad you said that, because from two perspectives, as you know, I deal strictly from the Bible and the what I understand, not Christian perspective, because we all know what happened once Christianity came to the Western world. It was nothing like what it was when it was in the Eastern world with our own people there. They completely flipped it for, as you said, economic and political and powerful reasons. So it's nothing, it doesn't resemble at all the early Christianity. But with that being said, some believe it, some don't. I'm one who simply believes that we are at the end of the age. I believe that the rule of man is coming to a close. Earth belongs to God. He wants it back. And so we do to one another, while we're still on this end of the ugly, we do to one another the very best that we can, so that the Creator can be pleased with what we are doing for our fellow man, and that includes all humans. In the meantime, this world is not ours forever. We've been given Earth to take care of it. We've been given each other to take care of each other, and we've done a lousy job of both. So the Creator is saying, time's up. It's going to be a process for this mess to come to a close. But if you look all around you, all around the world, the time is ending. It's closing out. All this mess that we're seeing is because man is losing out. What happens when man starts losing out? He's like a mad dog. And what does that expression say? A mad dog is worse just before it dies. We're looking at the dying civilizations so that the Creator can have what rightfully belongs to him, and he's going to have it run in the correct way. And man will, if he has any sense, will comply. That's where we are now as far as I'm concerned. I am convinced that we're at the end of the age. So brothers and sisters, do good to your fellow man as you have opportunity. And do well to Mother Earth as you have opportunity. But don't think this is linear, as I used to say when I was teaching my students. The white world is linear. It's a straight line where they don't look back. They think that things are going to go on and on and on in that straight line forever without an end. We are a circular people. So what goes around comes around.
That's right.
The swan.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a child growing up, you told me a lot of stories, and I love you dearly for it. And if you give me this opportunity, I'd like to tell you one, because the parallel and the circular, I just have to say it. you know, when we were children, and they still do it now, I don't guess they do it as much, I don't know. But we know we had that good hair and that bad hair thing going. And I know what group I fell in. And sometimes we would have what they call the little beady balls that would grow down our necks. That's the part that you'd have the when you go to the beauty shop, you know, they'd clean your neck up. But anyhow, when I was in school, I had an opportunity to live in an international community. So I watched my African brothers, you know, walking around campus to and fro, doing this and that. And they had, some of them, had those beady balls on their necks. But it didn't seem to bother them. So I went to one day and I asked him, I said, how come you have these beady balls on your, yes, on your neck, but you still have all this pride and you don't even know they're back there? He says, because I'm in the circle, my sister. I said, what? He said, the light is, you know, on a 360. He said, these people, he says, with the straight hair, is parallel. It never touch. It, or touches. He says, but the circle, he said another comparison. He said, with the parallel, you can tell where it begins, and you can tell where it ends. He said, but the circle, he said, the circle has no beginning, has no end. It just keeps going around and around. You hear me? And the man said,
yeah.
He said, and the tighter, he said, the tighter the curl, the closer to the center of the circle you are. I said, now. So, brothers and sisters, if you see the beady balls on my neck, just say that sister's proud of herself. And y'all have a very good night. Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off, Sister Swan, but I just wanted to share. Because some of us need to hear that.
I agree. There's no cut off when you're sharing.
Brothers and sisters, we're coming to almost a close. And again, and you can see this has been 2 hours of continuing communications. We haven't gone to a sponsor or nobody because of your comments. And like I said, communications is something that we as African Americans should be having. But within closing, I like to remind everybody that within the next few hours, before you wake up in the morning, Europe could be at war. And before you wake up in the morning, you could have many African Americans who are in the military and they've already sent to many parts of Europe. You could have them possibly losing their life within the next 24 hours before you wake up in the morning. This could actually, in reality, be going on. So I'm saying if there's a special prayer that you think we can make to avoid this, please make it. But I'm saying it's the circumstances that we put ourselves in. And that circumstance has to be made by each one of us as a human being, whether you are a believer or not, the circumstances of what we're confronted with, because we know that if this war breaks out, the first thing they're going to do is go back to the draft. They're going to need everything in this country could be shed off and everything goes towards the military if we are at war. And so again, what are the circumstances that we as a community and what decisions that we make, because war and the destruction of war is right on top of us. These folks are not Putin and Donald Trump. As a matter of fact, Donald Trump sent Putin a letter today telling him how proud he was of him. Many others, including the person that was in charge of our State Department under Donald Trump, sent Putin a letter today expressing how smart they think he is and this decision that he's making, how they support it. So, brothers and sisters, the United States, again, like I said, the United States, like I said, white folks, I don't care whether they're from Europe or whatever part of Europe they're from, when they get to the United States, they become white folks. And if these white supremacists, I don't care whether they're Europeans or whether they're right here in the United States, are making the decision on whether on our destruction, and do we join the destruction that they're causing? So again, we're gonna close here. But like I said, communications and getting together as a community and communicating, because the communications have to be just like the sister said a few moments ago. Do we, because if the destruction comes, prayer is going to be extremely important. But you know, prayer and fighting goes along together. So again, where do we stand? And where do we stand in our prayer? Do we pray and get slaughtered for these white supremacists and these folks who call themselves white folks and they start all these wars and fighting, killing each other? Is this a white man's war? And if it is, what do we have to do with it? And the second question is, why are we dying if white folks want to shoot and kill each other? Because they're the ones who are the white supremacists. We didn't make them be white supremacists. We didn't ask them to be white supremacists. We don't want them to be white supremacists. But they are white supremacists. And again, so where are the same white supremacists, I will remind you, that are saying now, African Americans, and this is our country, and they're telling you, and they're foreigners who are just coming here, some of them can't speak English, but they have the right to vote, and they're saying that you don't have the right to vote. So brothers, until next week, we will continue our conversations here in the New Africa Business Association, but most of all, March the 3rd to March the 6th, the John Lewis Jubilation March in Selma, Alabama. That's where the next large gathering will be. And at that gathering, what would we do to save our communities? Until the next time, brothers and sisters, I am going to say peace be unto all of you. And good night.
One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you loved
mother's woman friend, and share with black folks not of kin. People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers?
Mm-hmm.